Welcome to class, session 646 of the Warren County Radio Bible School. And today we're going to have a Sunday school lesson on the baptism of Jesus. Now, I know this is not Sunday, but I call it a Sunday school lesson because E.A. Elam wrote the notes for this lesson for the Sunday schools of July the 20th, 1924. And so the text for this lesson comes from the book of Mark. Mark chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. And we'll be reading that text in just a moment. The Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And so now take your seats, and the class will begin. And this is class session 646, Mark chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Even as it is written in Isaiah the prophet, "Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, who shall prepare thy way. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, make ye ready the way of the Lord, make his path straight." John came, who baptized in the wilderness and preached the baptism of repentance unto remission of sins. And there went out unto him all the country of Judea, and all they of Jerusalem, and they were baptized of him in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. And John was clothed with camel's hair, and had a leathern girdle about his loins, and did eat locusts and wild honey. And he preached, saying, "There cometh after me he that is mightier than I, the latchet of whose shoes I am not worthy to stoop down and unloose. I baptize you in water, but he shall baptize you in the Holy Spirit." And it came to pass in those days that Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee, and was baptized of John in the Jordan. And straightway, coming up out of the water, he saw the heavens rent asunder, and the Spirit as a dove descending upon him, and a voice came out of the heavens, "Thou art my beloved Son, in thee I am well pleased." Now the golden text for this Sunday school lesson is that last verse, Mark chapter 1 and verse 11. "Thou art my beloved Son, in thee I am well pleased." The devotional reading for this Sunday school lesson comes from Isaiah chapter 42, verses 1 through 4. "Behold, my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delighteth. I have put my Spirit upon him, and he will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He shall not cry, nor lift up his voice, nor cause it to be heard in the street. A bruised reed will he not break, and a dimly burning wick will he not quench, till he bring forth justice in truth. He will not fail, nor be discouraged, till he hath set justice in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law." Now there are some geographical notes associated with this lesson, and they read as follows out of Elam's notes. In order to gain correct information concerning the River Jordan from the source to mouth, consult the Lands of the Bible by McGarvey, or the works of some other accurate man who has not only seen this river in country, but who was there sufficiently long to take measurements and give accurate accounts of them. When I read that, I turned to my shelves, and I pulled that old volume of the Lands of the Bible by J.W. McGarvey out And I will read to you what he says about the Jordan Valley. It is interesting that this was copyrighted in 1880. And someone might say, well, why would you read from an account so old? And it is also interesting then to note that when J.W. McGarvey visited this land, he did so before many of the modern developments had taken place. That Jordan River has been tapped so often for its water resources in that area that it is but a little stream compared to what it once was. And so McGarvey got to see these things before modern developments had changed them. His account, in his day, a day when travel was not very common to go from America into that land, was a fascinating account. It's one of the most fascinating accounts that you can read. And he took careful note of the things, as we'll see in this, and read about his journey through the lands of the Bible in his day. I'm going to read from J.W. McGarvey, beginning on his page 30, on the geography of Palestine, his account of the Valley of the Jordan. That portion of Palestine thus far described is bound on the east along its entire length by the Valley of the Jordan. If you stand on the slightly elevated site of the ancient city of Dan and look to the south, you will see before you the most northern section of this valley. It stretches before you apparently a dead level about 20 miles, and it is about 5 miles wide. A mountain wall rises from it on either side to a height of about 1,500 to 2,000 feet, while the horizon at the farther end of it is bounded by low hills jutting out from the mountains on either side. It is called the Plain of Hulei. The site of Dan on which you are standing is at the northern extremity of the plain, and if you turn and look northward, you will see that from the north end of the plain arises the spurs of Mount Hermon, terminating to the northeast in the snow-covered summit of that lofty mountain. The site of Dan is a mound about 30 feet high, and is under the western side of it there issues from the ground one of the largest springs in the world. It sends forth a stream about 20 miles wide, and from 20 to 30 inches deep, which flows southward along the middle of the plain and is hidden in the distance by a jungle of weeds, canes, poplars, and other vegetation which grow in tropical luxuriance. This spring is the central and principal source of the River Jordan, and the stream which flows from it is called the Ledan. 2.5 miles east of Dan are the ruins of Caesarea Philippi, under whose northern wall issues another spring, about half as copious as the one at Dan. The stream which flows from it, starting from an elevation of nearly 1,000 feet above the lowest part of the plain, rushes rapidly away toward the southwest and enters the Ledan about 6 miles from the source of the latter. The spring is the eastern source of the Dan. About 1.5 miles west of Dan, the road running in that direction crosses a bridge built of black rock, which spans a rapid mountain stream lying deep within its bed of the same rock. This stream is the Hejmonay. It is about the size equal to the stream in which flows from Caesarea Philippi, and it issues from a third spring near the town Hesbia under the western side of Mount Hermon. This spring is the western and most distant source of the Jordan, and the stream empties into the Ledan a short distance below the mouth of the one from Caesarea Philippi. All three of these noted springs maintain a copious flow throughout the dry season, being fed by the melting of the snows on Mount Hermon. The snow water finds its way between the rocks, down into the foundations of the mountain, whence it is forced up, icy cold, under these and many smaller springs. At the junction of these three streams, the Jordan River flows southward a few miles further, and then expands into Lake Huleh, called in the Bible the Waters of Merom. This lake is triangular in shape, being about 3 miles wide at its northern end and coming to a point at its southern end, length about 4 miles. Its northern end is 12 miles from the central source of the dam. Its average depth is only about 11 feet. It lies on a level with the Mediterranean Sea. The plain in the immediate vicinity of the lake is too wet for cultivation, so wet that the lake shore can be reached only from the east and southwest. But the chief parts of it are tillable, and all is exceedingly rich. It contains no villages, but is cultivated by a tribe of Bedouin Arabs who pitch their tents near the grain fields and pasture their stock on the luxuriant natural vegetation. From the southern end of the lake, the Jordan starts again on its course. At first, it glides tranquilly between sloping banks, but after passing under an ancient stone bridge 1 mile and a half from the lake, it begins to descend very rapidly. It cuts through the hills which bound the southern end of the plain in a narrow gorge between perpendicular walls of black rock and rushes down a continuous succession of rapids and cascades until it nears the Lake of Galilee, where it reaches a level and runs slowly into the lake. The entire distance from Lake Huleh to the Lake of Galilee is 10.5 miles. The difference in elevation between the two is 682 feet. The Jordan makes nearly all of this descent in 8 miles, a fall of about 85 feet to the mile. The Lake of Galilee, the Lake Huleh, is but an expansion of the River Jordan. It is 6 miles wide at the widest part and 12.5 miles long. The curve of the northern shore continues to widen toward the south until it reaches a distance of 4 miles, when the shores begin to contract toward a narrow point at the southern end. The southern point lies eastward of a long line drawn down the middle. The form of the lake is not unlike that of a longitudinal section of a pear, with the stem end toward the south and turned a little to one side. It is bound on the east and the west by a continuation of the same mountains which bound the plain of Huleh above, and they maintain about the same relative height. But the level of the lake, according to Condor, who carried the levels from the Bay of Acre, is 682 feet below that of the Mediterranean. Its water is clear and deepens gradually from the shore on every side. Its greatest depth is 165 feet. It abounds in fish as it did of old. But the fleet of boats which once dotted its surface with their white sails is now reduced to 3, and even these find only partial employment in supplying the market of Tiberias, the only town now left on its shores, which once were packed with a dense and busy population. The lake is often visited, as it has ever been, by sudden storms, which literally come down upon it from the surrounding mountaintops, and in a few moments lash its waters into a fury. The lake, during the long period of history, has passed under a variety of names. When first mentioned in the Bible, it is called the Sea of Kinnereth, properly from a city of that name which stood on its shore. In the New Testament, it's sometimes called the Lake of Gennesaret, from a small plain on its western shore called the Land of Gennesaret, sometimes the Sea of Galilee, from the country west of it, and twice the Sea of Tiberias, from the town of Tiberias on its western shore. The last title is found only in the latest of the New Testament narratives and still clings to it in the Arabic form, Bahar Tabareh. We'll finish this reading in the next class.